The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a jolly Christmas and a happy new year.
Hi, Jesse.
Quick message for our listeners before today's show. So this has been a terrible time since October 7th. It has been terrible for people all over the world. I think it's okay to recognize that it's been quite hard for many people here in Canada who are connected to the conflict. I think we can recognize that without diminishing the drastic difference in suffering of the people, of the populations of Gaza and Israel. But people here are hurting too. Personally, professionally, politically, in far lesser ways that are nevertheless real. Schools and offices and unions and political parties and newsrooms are all facing big internal challenges. A lot of strong opinions, a lot of big feelings, and some very sharp divisions. And Canada Land is no exception. But the point of this message is just to say that that's okay. We're going to be okay. I'm not going anywhere. My colleagues' jobs aren't going anywhere for criticizing me. Canada Land is not going anywhere. We're going to work through it.
And as president of the union, I can say we're committed to working with you and the management team to figure out a way forward. We're not going to stop reporting stories, and we're going to really try not to make ourselves the story.
We're going to struggle through this. It's really tough right now, but we will. And I hope that you'll be here with us for it. Okay, that's all. Today's show is a gem from the archives.
Because we all need a week off.
Thanks. You have an obnoxious relative. I think you know the one I'm talking about. And it doesn't matter who you become, how you change, what you accomplish, they will always see you the same way. And in seeing you that way, they will always be able to somehow make you that way. The thing about you that's never going to change is their ability to get to you, to get the better of you. They have terrible opinions, this obnoxious relative of yours. Those opinions, too, will never change. You will not be able to change them. And yet, you will argue about them every year over the holidays. And pointless arguments are a holiday tradition. Well, I'm here to help. Earlier this month, I made myself available through a toll-free number to anyone who was looking for a fight. You're welcome. Wait for it. Hello, caller.
Hey, is it me?
Hi, Jesse.
Hi, what's your name and what can I fight with you about?
Well, I don't want to fight with you at all. I just want to ask a few things.
I want to say, you know, as a Jewish person, I do, like, this is a vital service you're providing.
How so?
Well, just, it's like, this is the sport of holidays, is, you know, arguing with my grandfather about Israel.
Hi, caller. What's your problem?
Hi, Jesse. I'm just a sandwich enthusiast, and I would just like to argue with you that a pizza is a sandwich.
Hi, what's your problem?
I take issue with about the way you talk about Quebec, Jesse.
Caller, are you there?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. What's your name and what do you want to argue about?
My name's Simon. I'm from Toronto. I was also born in Regina, though. But, Jesse, do you have a beef with Winnipeg?
The way you pronounce Quebec is absolutely wrong. It's not Quebec. It's Quebec. Why do you keep using the Anglo way, the colonial way? You don't say Bombay. You don't say Peking. You say Mumbai and Beijing, right? Why do you say Quebec?
Because one is a different word and one is a different pronunciation.
Okay. The concept of an open sandwich is no less of a sandwich just because it happens to be open. And that's basically what a pizza is. It's like a yeasted bread that is baked and it contains, like, you know, meat, produce, maybe like cheese, definitely sauce or like condiment of some kind. Like, it's just an open-faced sandwich, and you happen to slice it up and you eat it with your hands.
Sure, why not? I mean, you know, it's a slippery slope that we never should have engaged with you people on. The hot dog, is it a sandwich or not? And now you're going to argue pizza. Like, it. A chicken wing's a sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an IKEA drawer that I'm staring at right now. That's a sandwich, too. Pizza's not a sandwich. It's not a sandwich by any definition of a sandwich. Even, like, a panini is not, like, if anything's fried on the outside of it, it's not a sandwich. Like, hot sauce... Does hot sauce preclude it from being a sandwich?
Hello.
How you doing? Who are you? What are we going to fight about?
Oh, boy. Well, I saw a tweet about Queen's Gambit. Sorry, my name is Matthew Van Deventer. And, I'm not here to say it's perfect, but, you know, just curious to hear why it's not good or whatever, how you would put it in the tweet.
I don't remember exactly what I tweeted, but I think...
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Jesse Brown?
Hi, caller. What are we going to argue about?
Just a little curious about the whole Wee thing and Trudeau's mom and why she had to be brought into your media coverage so much. Like, how can you defend putting her through so much of it when she literally had nothing to do with the organization or the government at the time?
Okay, cool. Let's talk about that. So, conflict of interest 101. Margaret Trudeau didn't do anything wrong that I'm aware of, but she's a character in this story, in a newsworthy story. She's the mother of the prime minister, and after her son is elected prime minister, she starts to get paid a lot of money. But this idea that it was unfair to Margaret Trudeau, who's a very public person, for her to be, you know, I'm not even going to say implicated because I don't think she did anything wrong that I'm aware of. But this idea that some great wrong was done to her by our reporting and everyone's reporting on her role in this, I just don't see that. You still there?
Sorry, Jesse, I think he hung up on you. I guess you didn't persuade him. I'll send in the next person, okay?
Thanks, Kasia.
I won't hang up on you.
Thank you. That was pretty good. What did you think?
I thought it was good. I mean, I don't disagree with anything you were saying. I mean, I've worked at Wee Days before. It's, I don't want to get into it. It's when you mentioned Winnipeg that really motivated me to call, because Winnipeg is the greatest place in the world, and Toronto is a shithole.
I'll argue against Winnipeg.
I don't know why people have a beef with Winnipeg. I don't know why people don't like the folks on the prairies, and I feel like we need sort of more access to the Canadian media and sort of more, maybe, respect. I don't know.
Well, I mean, ever since Kalekis closed, I mean, what is there to say about it? The Genie's cake is wildly overrated, you know? And it's a cake that people, like, you can get kids pretty excited about that cake. Like, a cake and a cookie combined sounds fantastic. It was hyped up to me all my life. My dad's from North End of Winnipeg. I grew up hearing about this cake. I go to Winnipeg, and somebody, it's their birthday, and I get a slice of this. It's not even a good cake. Toronto's a shithole? First of all,
I've lived.
I don't want to start on the defensive here. I'll take you in the order that you came at me. You're not saying Winnipeg is good or Winnipeg is underrated or Winnipeg has its charms that are hard to detect. You just said that Winnipeg is the greatest place in the world.
Yes.
I think you're going to have to substantiate that.
All right. We got affordable housing. We got winter so cold that no one comes here and people leave us alone. We've got a fantastic art scene, much better than any other city in Canada, specifically music scene. We've got people on the street who are kind. And we don't go half-assed on anything. So, you know, our coronavirus response is fully terrible, not just half terrible, like in Ontario.
So what do you have left? I like the charming old vintage signs that it's frozen in time. it's ridiculously cold. Like, it's, I mean, I know that's kind of the easy complaint, but it's like trying to murder you. Winnipeg is a city that's trying to murder everyone within it. So what good can be said?
The cold is something that, you know, allows us to weed out the weak, you know?
Winnipeg, it weeds out the weak.
Yeah, I think that would be a good slogan, don't you think?
Well, caller, I appreciate your Darwinist eugenics argument for Winnipeg as a natural selector of the strong. I think you mount a good defense. If from this shithole, I say to you, Godspeed, God bless, Chag Sameach, and thank you for the call.
Chag Sameach. We'll go to a deli if you're ever in town. Thanks for taking my call.
I'll do that with you too. Okay, take care.
Right on.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Can you tell me your name and what we're going to argue about?
Yeah, my name is Pia Chattopadhyay. I host the Sunday Magazine on CBC Radio. And apparently, although this is the silliest argument I might ever get into, we are going to argue about if Billy Joel is great or, as you say, Jesse, not great.
I think it would be a mistake for me to argue against Billy Joel on aesthetic grounds. I think that for me to say that it's like schmaltzy, sentimental, you know, children's music, I like a lot of corny stuff. Music is subjective. Who's right or wrong in these matters? You know, Pia?
Children's music? I've just never heard anyone describe Billy Joel's music as children's music.
I would be, I think, in error to pursue that line of argument. Instead, I'm going to argue on ethical grounds against Billy Joel.
Let's hear it.
I mean, any song you want to look at, like, you know, who is she? She's the contempt for the uptown girl, who's supposed to be the object of desire, but she's really just this, like, she's living in her white bread world with her high-class toys, you know, but me, I'm the backstreet guy, you know, and I'm not so tough just because I'm in love. You know, she'll understand what kind of guy I've been, and then I'll win. It's a song about him. It's not a song about the uptown girl. Same with Piano Man.
Let me just hold you up there.
Okay.
You are just starting with the easy pickings, right? Uptown Girl, yes, hugely popular. Not one of his best songs, and one that I often just hit skip on, to be honest with you. So I'm not taking the fight there.
Well, I'm sure you'll consider this also fish in a barrel, but, you know, Piano Man, like every character in that bar is just some loser who he sneers at. I mean, he's at a gay bar and he doesn't seem to like anyone there. John at the bar could have been a movie star. You know, Davey is still in the Navy and probably will be for life. But me, it's me they've been coming to see, right? Like, these are songs of hate and contempt.
Okay. For a guy who says, I don't like Billy Joel, you sure know a lot of lyrics. So I think you might have listened to more Billy Joel than you're letting on. I have to say, Jesse, mm-hmm. So I grew up in Saskatoon, and my parents are immigrants from India, and we had about three records growing up. And one of them was Billy Joel's Glass Houses. So I have a deep nostalgia for Billy Joel. So here's how I got back into Billy Joel during the pandemic. In July, when we were allowed to leave our home, I went up to my sister's cottage with a friend, and she wasn't there. And one night, as we were drinking wine or beer, I can't even remember, we laid outside and looked at the stars and listened to Billy Joel cranked up to 12. And it was absolutely delicious. So again, I think during the pandemic, we're all craving these bits of memory and nostalgia. And he's my guy. And I listened to it while I cooked dinner. I was like, put in Billy Joel's greatest hits. The kids like it.
Well. I think you're coming around to some points I've been making.
Which is?
Oh, the kids liked it, huh?
I'm sure you can say Quebec. It's absolutely pronounceable for Anglophones.
Where does it end? Do I try to pronounce any place name? The way that you would pronounce Quebecois surnames would be much more accurate than the way that I would do that. But
yeah, but that's not what I'm asking here. I'm asking you to say Quebec, because the Anglophones who insist on saying Quebec do it out of spite.
You get into trouble when you ascribe intentionality.
But what about it makes it not a sandwich?
I'm counting the ways right now. I mean, I think that you found a loophole in the existence of open-faced sandwiches, which you're trying to wedge a slice of pizza through that loophole. But you're going to run up against some category errors. I think that the way, I mean, you know, arguably, well, it's not fried, you know, pizza's baked, but the consistency of the kind of greasy exterior of the pizza crust is not consistent with the bread of any sandwich. Like, I guess like a grilled panini can take on a pizza-like crust.
You could grill sandwiches for sure, and like, and you have to like put some kind of oil down or something if you want to make sure that it doesn't get all f***ed up, but like it's good. Also, you can just cook the dough and with like a little bit of salt and some rosemary or something, maybe some garlic, and you can cut it up and dip it in soup. It's like a perfectly edible pan bread that is just as valid as any other slice of bread.
No, I think you've given me my angle here. That is why pizza's not a sandwich. There is no other sandwich where the bread is baked along with the fillings of that sandwich. That is the category. That's the definition of the definition of a sandwich does not include that which is dough is baked with the fillings. And you cannot point me to any other sandwich of which the same can be said, that we make that sandwich and we bake the bread at the same time. And that's why it's not a sandwich.
Sure, but I think that's kind of arbitrary because ultimately, it demands that the bread ends up being baked anyway. And it's not like you eat the pizza before it's baked.
We wouldn't want this to be arbitrary. So, yeah, we know what a sandwich is. I mean, let's just level with each other here. We know what a sandwich is. And a sandwich has bread on both sides, so you can hold it in your hand. And the fact that there is such a thing as an open-faced sandwich that nobody really eats anymore, like it's not on any menu, the open-faced sandwich.
If you go to a pub and you order a steak sandwich, chances are it's just going to be a steak on a big piece of toast. It's an open sandwich.
Listen, friend, I would sooner prohibit that from the category of sandwich than allow a slice of pizza in, because nothing means anything anymore if pizza is a sandwich.
No, it just means that the category of sandwiches is very inclusive. It's not anywhere near a slippery slope. God, you people are so dramatic.
Can you tell me who you are and what we're going to argue about?
My name is Kareem Shaheen. I used to be a Middle East correspondent for The Guardian, lived in Beirut and Istanbul, worked in the region, and now I'm based in Canada, Montreal, and I believe we're going to argue about hummus. Hummus has been under attack. Well, you see this a lot online. There are many multiple variants of the original hummus sold by food companies. You'll now be sad to see that on Twitter and on various websites, health food websites and so forth, you'll find chocolate hummus, you'll find gingerbread hummus, you'll find pineapple and jalapeno hummus, you'll find even Marmite hummus, and many such monstrosities.
So I got to argue in favor of chocolate hummus.
How could you?
Can I think out loud here before we actually engage? Can I just open up my process to you?
Sure. This is your moment of vulnerability.
I just feel like there are some well-trod hummus controversies, and I just want to avoid some of the pitfalls here. I think, you know, if you're like, you know, launching a hummus authenticity campaign, I think historically that would lead us to who invented hummus and did Israel steal the hummus? I don't feel like that's necessarily, like, when you're putting it up against chocolate hummus, that would take us off track, and I think it would be kind of, that would be a pointless conflict. I just feel like I'm going to have trouble getting behind, like, a full-throated defense of chocolate hummus. Because it sounds awful. But here's how I'm going to defend chocolate hummus. Are you ready for this, Kareem?
I'm ready.
All right. Would you agree that people from the Middle East, especially, you know, racialized people, suffer from various prejudice, racism?
Sure.
And yet, when we look at another group that was historically maligned, they were not considered to be Caucasian or white, they were othered. I speak now of the Italian people.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible to think of them in a non-white category. And at the same time,
we have the complete bastardization of pizza. We have sushi pizza, dessert pizza. You can get a gummy treat for a kid that's a gummy pizza. Now, no one would say that this is authentic pizza or even good pizza. It's just pizza that ended racism. So, you know, adhere to your puritanical hummus. You know, all it does is put up walls like, oh, the real hummus. Well, surely chocolate hummus, that's profane. That's not sacred hummus. But I'm sure you would also object to my store-bought hummus. I'm sure that none of us could have hummus as authentic as what you enjoy in your home. Well, I'm sure that the skins of each chickpea are removed and it's pureed beautifully and only the finest tahini. You know, but all you're doing is putting up a dividing line between me and you. You're just making, you know, why don't you let me relate to you and your hummus? And even just destroy it with chocolate or Marmite, because it will bring a greater level of harmony to human beings.
Let me ask you this. I mean, if you see your child reaching for the jalapeno pineapple pizza on the menu, what do you do? Do you intervene, or do you let them go through with the mistake that they're about to make?
I love pizza with pineapple and jalapeno. They're putting like honey on it. Like, that's delicious.
Well, okay. So here's the thing with that. So the problem is that you have these two competing tendencies, right? Everybody nowadays wants to have something authentic. At the same time, you know, what you see with things like chocolate hummus is like the opposite instinct of assimilation. You know, let's take something that has been a tradition somewhere for hundreds of years, and then let's kind of, you know, adapt that to our own taste buds or our own food fads. Because make no mistake, I think the main reason chocolate hummus, I think, is popular is because the word hummus makes it seem both exotic and healthy, instead of a disgusting, you know, Nutella chickpea mixture. Oh, I'm thinking of starting a political party because I don't think any cause has 95% approval rating. So I think I'm going to position myself as sort of the Nigel Farage of hummus, which
bad branding. I don't know. You were doing so well there.
Well, you know, the Nigel Farage of hummus, only less ridiculous.
I noticed the Anglophones of Western Canada don't do the Quebec thing. They say Quebec, they can't say it. And from what I understand, Albertans don't particularly like Quebec, but they still get it right.
Because they're not trying to spite you the way that we Anglos in Ontario are. Okay. You know what prohibits me from trying to say it even right now is I'm afraid of embarrassing myself.
Well, I can help you with that.
It's Maureen, and I'm calling from Calgary.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi. So I was just out for an errand, and I heard your old interview with Christy Blatchford, and I thought you went so easy on her. She has passed away, unfortunately, but she was really something. I don't think I admired her, but she was certainly controversial and liked to really stir the pot. And I guess maybe that's what columnists do.
Christy Blatchford, you are not alone in... there are a lot of people who heard that and were like, why were you so nice to her? You know, and it wasn't like people necessarily like, I wanted to hear, like, there were people sending me like detailed stories about how her reporting harmed them. And it seems like here we do have a little bit of tension in our positions. I take seriously the idea that I'm a host asking people to be my guest. So it's not about politeness. Even if it's a really contentious interview where I'm holding somebody accountable, I'm trying to get what they have to say about stuff out of them. And it's satisfying for a listener to then hear a host say, well, that's morally repugnant once they say the thing. But, you know, there's nowhere to go from that. And the person might just stand up and walk out of the studio.
Yeah.
I had a really rare opportunity with Christy Blatchford. I've never heard her have to account for what she's written about sexual assault survivors. I've never heard her have to account for what she's written. I hope that I got that out of her. Yeah.
I thought when she kept saying, yeah, so I was wrong. I felt like saying, well, you treat like I'll have a double-double. There's nothing to it to say I'm wrong. You know, I just found her way so flippant and irresponsible, you know, and yet she has this national, had this national platform, and I found her stories to be incredibly shallow and meaningless.
I mean, I'm glad to hear you say that, like, you know, to at least learn that, because, like, otherwise you're just suspecting, like, does she care about what she writes?
Yeah, good question.
She kind of was like, I don't, you know. She didn't even remember when I was, you know, bringing up things that she'd written. She was like, oh, did I say that? Did I write that?
Your angst was completely unnoticed by her.
Yeah, and there's a part of what she was saying that I relate to, which is, like, we absolutely make mistakes. And the fact that she surprised me, because I thought she was going to be like dogged and like, no, I was right. And instead she's like, yeah, so I got that one wrong. I think that's like the first half of what we're supposed to do. I'm sorry is the next part. Let me go correct that story. Let me not do that again.
Right.
That's supposed to be what happens then. But I hear the frustration. I don't know. I relive that interview a bunch and wonder if I kind of, you know what I mean though? Like, I just don't feel like it's right for me to be like, and therefore, you know, like, I'm not the judge. That's not the judge.
None of us are.
Here's the problem with Queen's Gambit. I mean, I watched the whole thing. Okay. So I think I said it's a little stupid and I'm going to stand by that.
See, it starts off slow, but also sort of rising up chess. I enjoy the game. It's putting a light on something that, you know, people have passed over for many years. I just putting a spotlight back into a old traditional game is nice.
Sure.
And I think it reflects it well. By all means, I would love to argue about it.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to argue more about it with people at work, but not too many people have seen it.
The idea that you take sedatives and then you're better at strategic thinking.
Mm-hmm.
That her superpower that opens up chess to her and allows her to run variations of moves 15 ahead. No, let's take it back. Is like, that's like saying that like crack cocaine is great for meditation. Okay, let's try it.
So it's K.
Yeah.
And Beck, like the musician.
Quebec.
Yeah, you can do it. You did it.
One more time. My next guest is joining us from Quebec.
Yeah, that's right. That's how you say Quebec.
But then what if I want to say Québécois? Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Quebec.
Québécois.
Québécois. It's not Québécois?
Québécois, and the feminine is Québécois.
But it's not Québécois.
Yeah, it's Québécois.
I am Canada's most celebrated newsletter impresario. Talking to my equivalent in the podcasting space.
Hi, Mark. What's your problem?
Hey, Jesse. I want to settle a score with you and maybe pick up where we left off a couple years ago. You had me on Canada Land talking about podcasts. And when I told you that I only listen to podcasts on double speed, you seem to take issue with this idea. That in fact, everybody should be tuning in to listen to these shows in real time. I was coming from the perspective that I want to listen to so many podcasts that hearing them as they were recorded can't contain all the stuff that I've got to listen to. Is there a case you want to make for hearing these podcasts in real time?
I mean, I think I already made it. I remember exactly what I said to you. Do you remember what I said to you?
I've completely forgotten. I'm here working on this 12:36 newsletter every day, and all this stuff is so far back in the past. What was your position? Why should I be listening to podcasts on single speed?
It's not so much a position of what you should be doing. It was just disgust and judgment for what you are doing. Why are you bragging about this? Like, it's like saying, oh, I've eaten at every 3-star Michelin restaurant in the world. And the way that I do that efficiently is I take all the food that they meticulously and beautiful, the artistry of the preparation and the beautiful plates and the tweezers and the reductions. And I just scrape the plate into a blender and I make myself a little smoothie. I turn it into a slurry and I drink that, and that's how I'm able to boast that I've eaten at all the great restaurants. And
there you go. There you go, like the downtown progressive elitist that you are.
We put a lot of work into these shows. This is how you. I don't know if people. I have a discerning audience who I think, by and large, does not do that, except for the people who do, who I'm offending horribly. This is what podcasts sound like to people.